The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Well, we begin, and is it the beginning of the end for Dak in Dallas? Prescott and the Cowboys didn't strike a long-term deal before yesterday's deadline. We bring you all the fallout and what the future may hold. Meanwhile, we got Derrick Henry and the Titans. They worked out that long-term deal in the final minutes yesterday. You're going to hear from Derrick Henry coming up later in the show. Plus, it happens every year in the NFL. We've got five teams that made the playoffs the previous year miss out. So with the loss of Brady in New England, would that lead to the Patriots joining that group? We bring you what our analysts voted on, and we're going to break down all of that and who's in, who's out, and all the fun stuff. Guys, what a busy week in the NFL. Welcome into the show. I love this panel today. We got Dan Graziano, Ryan Clark is going to be joining us, Tim Hasselbeck. I'm Diana Rossini. So we start with a recap of the 14 franchise-tagged players in light of yesterday's deadline to sign long-term deals. We had Derrick Henry, who joined Chris Jones, as the only players to reach extensions. Henry's deal came in right before the deadline at 4 years, $50 million. That means 12 players, that's 12, unable to reach long-term deals, which would be the most ever to play on a tag, right? AJ Green, you see there, you see Ngakoue. They remain the only ones who have yet to sign the franchise tag. The most notable, though, you see him there, is Dak Prescott. Well, Dak's brother, Tad, he had a bit of a reaction to all this, saying, this is a reason why I'm not a Cowboy. But Dak actually told USA Today this. He said, I'm a Cowboy, and I couldn't be happier. I look forward to working along Coach McCarthy, the staff, my teammates, to be the best team we can in pursuit of our goal, right? So he kept it pretty straight there. But his brother, a little bit more emotional about it, right? He said, there is a reason I was never a Dallas Cowboys fan growing up or before they drafted Dak. After today, who knows how much longer I'll be cheering for them. So sometimes the family leaks out how everyone's feeling there. That being said, let's welcome in ESPN's Cowboys reporter Todd Archer here joining the show. But I actually want to start with Dan on this. Dan, what can you tell us about why a deal didn't get done between Dak and the Cowboys? Then we'll go to Todd.
Yeah, Diana, it was a big surprise, I think, to a lot of people that something didn't get done at the deadline. And I think, you know, it's a situation where the Cowboys tend to get these deals done. We've seen them go right to the wire with other players, most recently Ezekiel Elliott last year at the end of training camp. So I think there was a thought that, oh, at some point somebody will blink, somebody will move one direction or the other, and it'll get done. But no one did. And there was contact yesterday. I was told the Cowboys reached out to see if there could be a deal done at that late date. But both sides were entrenched in their positions, and the Cowboys believed they had a significant and fair offer on the table. It wasn't what Dak Prescott was looking for. And Dak Prescott knew that his worst case scenario was $31.4 million guaranteed dollars for this year. And that's a pretty good worst case scenario. Projecting it forward now, he is definitely in a position of strength and high leverage when it comes to negotiating again next offseason, because the Cowboys are in a position where they're going to end up having to pay an awful lot on next year's franchise tag if it comes to that.
Todd Archer, I woke up today, looked at my phone, and I just saw the words divorce, Dallas. It was pretty much the topic of your column today. Are the Cowboys and Dak Prescott headed towards a divorce here?
Well, you know, Diana, as Dan was just saying, no one really thought that would have been possible. What, two months ago? We all thought, as Dan said, that a deadline would get a deal done and these guys would be able to live happily ever after, whatever that means in the NFL. But now you have to look at it as a possibility. We've had two other quarterbacks play a season on at least on the franchise tag for at least a year. Drew Brees in San Diego, Kirk Cousins in Washington. Neither guy signed a long-term deal with those clubs and walked away. You have to wonder if the Cowboys are in the same spot, because listen, what's going to change in the next year short of Dak leading them to a Super Bowl for one side or the other to change their thinking and their thought process? And now extrapolate the money out even more. You're talking either $83 or $93 million in the first 2 years of a multi-year deal in 21 and 22 based on the franchise tags. The Cowboys were well above the 70 or so million he was going to earn in 20 and 21, and I'm told there was a $50 million signing bonus in there. But clearly that wasn't going to get a deal done. So you have to think that a separation is entirely possible.
Yeah. That being said then, Todd, what would be the ramifications of Dak playing on the franchise tag again in 2021?
Well, this is when you have to think about the pandemic and the effect it's going to have on the NFL economics and revenues and things like that. If the cap stays flat or goes down, the Cowboys would not have $37.7 million in room to even tag Prescott should they go that route. Now, they can get to that figure relatively easy. You cut some players or you restructure contracts of Zach Martin, DeMarcus Lawrence, Amari Cooper, Jalen Smith, Lael Collins. You'll have that room to keep your quarterback for at least 2021. But you've now chewed into the future cap room going forward as well with an uncertainty debate around this coronavirus and what it is going to do to the NFL's landscape in terms of money. So it's not an ideal path, obviously. It's challenging, but it's one the Cowboys might have to do or look for their replacement for Dak Prescott starting in 2021.
Yeah. All right. Our Todd Archer, who's been all over the story the last few months for us. Thanks so much. All right. Let's bring in Tim Hasselbeck now, our resident quarterback, of course. Tim, how do you see this impacting Dak's on-field performance this season, knowing that they didn't give him this extension?
You know, Diana, you typically don't know how a player is going to respond to being in a contract year. You know, for some players, it makes them play better. Other players, the pressure becomes overwhelming and it's kind of in their head and they can't get past it. But I think what we have on Dak Prescott is that he played in a contract year last year and he played his best football by a pretty wide margin. I mean, threw for around 5,000 yards. He threw 30 touchdowns, which was the most in his career. And so I think, you know, he's had this kind of step where he's bet on himself and it's already worked. And so I would not expect this to affect his play adversely, especially when you consider that he's going to make $31+ million this year, which is significantly more. In fact, more than six times more than he's made throughout his entire career. So much like Kirk Cousins, who bet on himself, played well, and bet on himself again, I think that Dak Prescott certainly has the capability of doing that.
Yeah, and I think he likes to prove everyone wrong. He's said it in the past, too. Just, you know, bring on the doubters. So we'll see how this goes. But that being said, Tim, how would you actually sum up how Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, and the Cowboys handled Dak's contract negotiations as a whole here?
I think they handled it poorly. You know, in 2018, Dak Prescott made $630,000. At that point, it was pretty clear. That was his third season as a starter. You knew who he was as a player. You got a pretty good sense of what he could do and how you could build around it. You know, tearing up his deal at that point and, you know, extending him basically would have been the right move. At that point, it was cash poor. Starting quarterbacks go in the National Football League. I think it was enough evidence of him as a player. And so getting ahead of it at that point, the team would have had some leverage. There would have been a desire from the player to put money in his pocket at that point. And he was probably far enough away from, you know, the franchise tag and the $30 million that he would have thought that it was worth it. I mean, I think that, you know, being ahead of it would have drastically helped the Cowboys. But instead, by waiting, Dak has his best year, and then he's looking at 2 years, $70 million, basically. That ends up being the starting off point for doing a deal with Dak Prescott at this point. And because of that, I think it started to make it prohibitive probably for the Cowboys to feel comfortable with what his demands were.
I think, Tim, when you look at the Cowboys, I mean, people are going to want to bang on them for this, and they did want him back, and it's to their detriment that they did not get him signed long-term. But it's really important to remember, I think, that there are two sides to this. And the Cowboys did talk about an extension with Dak Prescott last summer and last fall. And Dak Prescott all along had a number and a contract in mind that he was determined to get, knowing that the worst-case scenario was a franchise tag and probably a couple of franchise tags at these very high numbers that we're discussing. And he and his agent, you know, they stayed disciplined. They held their ground. So I don't know that it's a question of like, oh, the Cowboys should have done something. They tried. they couldn't get to an agreement. You can't just impose a contract on a guy, and if it wasn't what he wanted, then it wasn't going to happen. So I think I don't want to say blame, but there is certainly responsibility on both sides here in terms of it not getting done. And Dak Prescott recognized a level of leverage that he has that maybe some players that the Cowboys have dealt with in the past either didn't have or weren't willing to, you know, exercise to this same extent, and he's got them in a position that they've rarely found themselves in.
Yeah, certainly. I feel like we've heard so many different tales from both sides, and just like we know in any story, there's always three, right? The Cowboys, Dak Prescott's, and maybe a little bit of the truth there. Guys, if history is any indication, though, right, Dak stays as a Cowboy, could be numbered. He'll be the third quarterback to play a full season under the franchise tag, joining Drew Brees, as we were mentioned before, Kirk Cousins. Both Brees and Cousins eventually ended up leaving their teams in free agency. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen with Derrick Henry. He is not going anywhere. The Titans and Henry came to terms on a four-year, $50 million extension prior to the deadline on Wednesday. He now averages $12.5 million per season. That's fifth among NFL running backs. You see him there behind David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, and Christian McCaffrey. Let's take a listen to King Henry today.
Very excited. Just happy that the process is over with. Get back to football and hopefully getting together at the end of this month. So I just felt like with this time right now, I just felt like it made sense, you know, to go ahead and lock it up, you know, with all this stuff going on. I mean, we all been, you know, watching, seeing it all over, you know, everywhere about, you know, the COVID and, you know, all the uncertainty. So I just felt like it made sense. We feel like it made sense. I was glad to, you know, be able to lock this up and, you know, get it over with.
Get it over with. Well, it's certainly nice when it feels like everyone walked away winning here. But, Tim, I want to start with you since the Titans play in your backyard there down in Nashville. What's your just general reaction to this deal the Titans gave Derrick Henry?
Well, I think people feel like it's a decent deal for the team. I mean, you just had the full screen up of how it comes in, you know, well below some of the numbers of other, you know, top running back deals. Some of those deals, I think people view as, you know, not necessarily good deals for the team. And so I think that there's definitely been a reaction that the team got a fair deal with Derrick Henry. It sounds like Derrick feels like, you know, he received a fair deal. And then I think outside of the numbers, you have to think about, you know, how people generally feel about inside the locker room, but also, you know, in terms of the fan base. He's really well liked in this area. And I don't know if it's playing in the SEC and kind of still being an SEC country. I think people like him as a player, like how he fits with the football team, kind of the mentality of how they've built this team, the way they've invested with their in their offensive line. And then I think how it kind of worked between having Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, and obviously Ryan Tannehill signing a long-term deal with the Titans this offseason. So this just really feels like a situation where it was the best match for the player. It was also the best match for the team. And while they could have done, you know, a deal where they're just playing on the franchise tag, extending it out and not resetting the market seemed to be something that both sides were comfortable with.
Yeah, I think the key thing, the way to look at this is Derrick Henry, as he articulated there, did what Dak Prescott didn't do, right? He decided, all right, you know what? I'm not going to necessarily get everything I wanted. So let's just do this deal now. It's a good deal. It's good enough, and I'm going to be happy with it. And given everything that's going on in the world and the uncertainty and everything, it's a good idea to get this done now. He just made a different decision than Dak did. Now, the running back numbers are much lower than quarterback numbers, but if Derrick Henry had been franchised again next year, this year plus next year, he would have made $22.6 million total. His new contract guarantees him a little over $25 million. So it's not a lot more. It's a little more, and it's all guaranteed now as opposed to having to wait till next year to get 21 guaranteed. So it benefits him in that way. Big picture, if you're the agent for Dalvin Cook or Alvin Kamara or Joe Mixon and you're hoping for a big extension for your guy, you're not thrilled with this deal because, as Tim, as you mentioned, it didn't reset the market. He's the fifth highest paid running back, which he already was on the franchise tag anyway. So it didn't do anything to the market. He couldn't even get to David Johnson's deal, which is 2 years old in terms of average annual salary. But for him personally, he made the decision that this was good enough for what he wanted at this time. And it's just another lesson in, as much as people want to look at what the team's doing, what the agent is saying, ultimately it comes down very often to the player's decision. And he decided this was good enough for him.
Yeah, you say it comes down to. Well, Titans GM John Robinson, he's going to join the show later in just a few minutes to actually talk about how this thing came down to the final minute. He explains what actually went down, so it's a pretty cool story. All right, guys, new on NFL Live. This developing story out of Washington, it seems like everyone is talking about this right now. Our Adam Schefter has tweeted out that Washington's NFL team hired D.C. attorney Beth Wilkinson to review the organization's protocols per league sources. Now, while Wilkinson is expected to conduct a deep dive into the organization's past culture, team officials are highly upset and frustrated about speculation that's going around right now. The Washington Post is preparing a story about its NFL team that is expected to highlight the culture that existed. Now, within the past week, front office members Richard Mann III, Alex Santos, as well as radio play-by-play voice Larry Michael, who's been there for over a decade, all left the organization. Now, moments ago, Adam Schefter also tweeted out this, saying that minority shareholders of Washington's NFL team have hired the investment bank Mogan Company to vet buyers and to sell their stake in the team, per a league source. So it seems like something is certainly cooking in our nation's capital as we await to see what the Washington Post is going to report over the next few days.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back in the NFL, Myles Garrett signed a record 5-year contract extension with the Browns yesterday. More details in a few moments, but we got to go back to how we got here, right? Let's go back to 2017. The Browns selected Garrett with the number one overall pick in the draft after recording 31 sacks and 7 forced fumbles in 3 seasons at Texas A&M. A year later, he earned his first Pro Bowl selection, recording 13.5 sacks. That's the second most by a Browns player in a season since sacks became official in 82. But this past season, Garrett was suspended indefinitely by the NFL after ripping off Mason Rudolph's helmet and then hitting the Steelers quarterback in the head with it. And just 3 months later, in February, Garrett was reinstated by the NFL after he met with Commissioner Roger Goodell. And now, here we are, he's the highest paid defensive player in NFL history with an extension worth $100 million. In the process, he reverses a trend of Browns draft utility because the last time one of their first round picks was signed to a second year contract was Joe Hayden. He was picked in 2010. Here's Myles Garrett earlier today.
We had always talked about doing something like this even for my first year in the league, and they always had confidence in me and my abilities, and now that's just confirmation of that with them. They'll give me this extension, and I know I'm just going to do my best to make it worth it for them, but it'll make me and my friends and my family proud. There's no reservation for me because I kind of like that the history is what it is, because it'll only make it so much sweeter when we turn this thing around and actually start winning big games, winning playoff games, and finally get to that last one. So I'd like to be a part of that. I'd like to lead the pack for that. And so wherever we do that, wherever it starts next year or how many years it takes, I want to lead Cleveland to that promised land.
All right, let's bring this back out to our panel. Dan, so just 8 months after the Mason Rudolph incident, people were calling for this lifetime ban of Myles Garrett, and then he signed this record-breaking deal a few months later. How did this all come together in Cleveland?
Diana, my understanding from the start has been that the Browns have never wavered on their desire to have Myles Garrett signed to a long-term contract, that the incident with Mason Rudolph, while upsetting and resulting in his suspension, was not one that altered their opinion of him as a player and their desire to have him around long term. The number one pick in the 2017 draft, so he joins Patrick Mahomes and Christian McCaffrey as stars from that draft to get extensions with 2 years left on their deal. The Browns had incentive to get this done now because, remember, they had two top four picks the following year, Baker Mayfield and Denzel Ward. Those guys are going to need extensions coming up here in the next couple of years. So to have some level of cost certainty on a guy they believe is an elite pass rusher. Remember, he had 10 sacks last year in only 10 games. Pass rusher being the position that's closest to quarterback in terms of how the market skyrockets at the type. Guys like Joey Bosa coming up for deals here in the next couple of years. The Browns felt like this was the time to get Myles Garrett under contract so they can handle future business, knowing how much space he takes up in their budget.
I think you mentioned it, Dan, about, you know, pass rushers right after quarterbacks. I mean, I think that's why this makes sense. I also think this, you know, there's so much talk, and obviously I'm not arguing the indefinite suspension, but I think people around the game of football, while they haven't seen incidents as ugly as the incident in a game that he had with Mason Rudolph, unfortunately, stuff like that happens in training camp practices, and not that it's commonplace, but it's not as unusual as it probably looked to the fan in a game. And so the reaction to it and this thought that, you know, Myles Garrett was basically somehow, you know, somebody that didn't belong in the National Football League, I just don't think that that's how people in the league viewed it at all. And so I think that situation is viewed as kind of a, you know, not something that really kind of describes who Myles Garrett is as a teammate, as a player. And so I don't think that there was hesitation because of that. I think the reality is, you mentioned 10 sacks in 10 games. I think he's been eligible to play 30 games, or he's played in 30 games and has 30 sacks. I mean, that's why he's getting this deal. He's a young player with a tremendous amount of upside still, and he's already been really productive.
Yeah. All right, so we got all into the contracts here all show long. Let's get into the other big story, which is the NFLPA database was released today, and it showed that, or the database released this, that 72 NFL players were known to have tested positive for COVID-19 as of last Friday, July 10th. So, Dan, I know you've been following this story closely. You know, what more context can you really provide here as the teams are preparing for training camp? Well, I mean, we're just a few days away here.
The NFLPA is trying, Diana, to keep its players updated as best as possible on the state of the virus. And that information, the 72 positive tests, comes from their website. If you go on NFLPA.com, like anyone can look at it, they have a page where they update it periodically how many positive tests that they know of among NFL players. This as 72 was as of last Friday. They also have a map that shows, it's like a heat map of tracking cases by NFL market. So it shows right now the Miami Dolphins are in the market that has the highest number of cases over the past 14 days. Other end of the spectrum, you have the New England Patriots, New York Giants, New York Jets, and places where the virus is more under control. So they want players who are heading to training camp to know what the situation is like in the places where they're going to be having training camp. In the meantime, the PA and the league are having all kinds of conversations about how this is all going to work. How often are they going to get tested? Are they going to play preseason games? What happens if a player wants or needs to opt out for COVID-related reasons? How is the coronavirus treated in terms of how it's handled with regard to what kind of injury it is and how long a player would have to miss? Would there be another special COVID injured reserve list? So there's a lot still to be worked out. And as you mentioned, 12 days away from July 28th, when most teams are scheduled to start training camp, not a lot of time to get this all figured out.
Yeah, Danny, and you have rookies like the Houston Texans who were expected to report on Saturday, and they don't even know what they're doing. Their travel hasn't even been booked yet. So, you know, speaking of the Texans, right here new on NFL Live, this is from J.J. Watt. In the interest of having everyone on the same page in terms of what we know and don't know at this time, here are a few things I've learned being on four NFLPA calls in the last 2 weeks with hundreds of other players. Keep in mind our rookies are scheduled to report in 48 hours. We want to play. We want to be as safe as possible. We have not received a single valid plan here. An ITER play, that's infectious disease emergency response. For any team or the league, we don't know if there will be daily testing, semi-daily testing, etc. We don't know how a potential positive COVID test would affect contracts, roster spots, etc. Nothing has been agreed upon regarding what training camp will actually look like and how the ramp-up period will work. We want to play. So he obviously lists out all the issues here. Dan touched on all the question marks. J.J. Watt followed up with that essentially here on Twitter. So, Tim, how are you looking at the situation if you were in the league still?
I would feel exactly the way J.J. feels about it. I mean, to think that you're 48 hours away, and speaking about the rookies, from reporting training camp, and you're not sure yet, you know, travel hasn't been booked yet. Are you comfortable getting on an airplane? Where are you staying? Are a lot of times you're in dorms. Do you have a roommate? I mean, like, there are so many different things about this that I think the players are in the dark about. And I know that Adam Schefter, throughout this time, has been reporting that there have been teams that have been frustrated with the lack of, you know, guidance and direction given to them from the league. And I think part of it is no one really knows. I mean, the experts on this don't really know. And so how in the world is a football team going to know how to handle it, or a coaching staff with its players, or a medical staff with the players on that team? You know, you ask, how would I handle it? Look, I think there are going to be some players that are just dying to get back to normalcy. Young, healthy guys that think that they're going to be unaffected and not going to get, have symptoms if they, in fact, you know, contract the virus. There are going to be other players that have different situations, whether it's them personally or the people close to them and around them that are concerned about, you know, their health and safety. And I don't see how these guys can start playing in training camp when they don't know. They don't know if there's preseason. They don't know if there's no preseason. Are the roster, you know, sizes going to be bigger? How are they going to help their families as they move to some of these cities? Because many of these players don't live in the cities that they play in. We have a lot of issues that need to get figured out before we think that there's going to be training camp in football.
I know, Tim, and I feel like we had this conversation a few months ago where we felt like the league was in such had the advantage, right, to watch the other sports, and time was on the side of the NFL. And here we are. The Houston Texans rookies are supposed to report in 48 hours, and we really don't know how this is going to go. Let's just hope that they can move forward here. There's a lot of smart people in this league who I think can come up with answers, and hopefully they can all get back to the field and playing football safely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, so guys, let's look at all 12 playoff teams from last season, right? So we had the Ravens and the 49ers. They took the top seeds in their respective conferences, but it was the Chiefs who took home the Lombardi Trophy. We know that they were the Super Bowl champs. So with that, it's time to relaunch our annual 5-in, 5-out series. So listen closely. 22 of the last 24 seasons, at least five teams have made the playoffs that did not qualify the year before. Last year, it was five teams that crawled from early vacation into the big dance, and the year before, it was seven. This year, the added bonus is each conference adds an extra wildcard team, so 14 teams are going to make the postseason instead of 12. All right, so we asked everybody in this building, and the only thing that was unanimous is that it's very hard to figure this out. So, of the 19 ESPN analysts and reporters surveyed, the Texans, the Vikings, the Titans, the Eagles, and the Bills were the five teams voted most likely to miss the playoffs in 2020. The Texans received the most of any 2019 playoff team with 16. So essentially, those are the five teams that were in the playoffs. And a lot of people here at ESPN think those are going to be the five teams that aren't going to make the playoffs. So let's bring our panel back in. Let's take each of these teams one by one as we look at their offseason moves. So, Tim, I want to start with you here. The Texans are the most frequent team voted out of the playoffs by our panel. Mm-hmm. I think you had them on your list from what I checked out. Sorry to call you out. But why?
I think they're the easiest one to forecast here. You just look at the division. I think people feel like the Colts are going to be better with Phillip Rivers there. It's a pretty strong roster. I think there's also people that feel like the Titans are heading in the right direction under Mike Vrabel. And then you think about the trade of DeAndre Hopkins and then absorbing the contract of David Johnson and trying to figure out what he has left. That, to me, on top of maybe some of the complaints about the culture in Houston, are some of the reasons why I think people look at that situation and think, well, that's the team probably the most likely to be out if you're talking about teams that, you know, of all of us kind of voting on this of why we would see it that way.
Yeah, and you're not the only one, though, Tim. Dan, you also picked the Texans not to make the playoffs, and you also picked the Vikings, who had the second most votes with 13. So why do you have them missing the postseason this year?
I think it looks so far like if you traded a really good wide receiver, you're out of the playoffs, right? DeAndre Hopkins and now Stephon Diggs. I think, like, it's hard to pick against either of these teams, right? The Texans have won their division 4 out of the last 5 years. They kind of find a way. And the Vikings always seem to be in contention, too, under Mike Zimmer. But, you know, I feel like they were kind of on the edge of not making it last year. The Diggs trade, you know, makes them a little bit weaker on offense. You know, they run a lot of stuff through Dalvin Cook, who hasn't been consistently healthy in his career. And I think, you know, the Bears could be a little better next year. So that was a tough call, but I had them out.
Yeah. All right. Well, I can tell you nobody was picking the Titans last year to win anything in the postseason. Yet they made it all the way to the AFC Championship game. We know they locked up Ryan Tannehill. We know they locked up Derrick Henry here. So they're 10 out of their 11 players on offense are back. But we have them out of the playoffs. Do you agree with this, Tim?
I actually don't agree with that. I mean, you talk about, you know, what got him to the postseason last year. In large part, it was the way Ryan Tannehill played. It was Derrick Henry's impact. Both of those guys are locked up and certainly, you know, probably happy with their deals. A.J. Brown is an absolute rising star at the wide receiver position. They're solid on the offensive line. And, you know, I just alluded to, you know, the direction under Mike Vrabel. I think he's done an excellent job with that team. And I think we've undersold maybe how good they are on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of good players over there, they're well coached. I think that's a team that could certainly win the AFC South, and so I actually have them in.
All right, you have them in, and they got rid of a lot of veteran defensive players there, so they may look a little different when they come back this season. But that being said, you also have the Eagles on your list that you think they are not making the playoffs. Why?
Well, in part because I had to pick five teams that weren't making it, and there's two extra teams that are going to make it. So I had to make some tough decisions. Look, I'm not sure that I think that they aren't a better team than the Dallas Cowboys, but they made the postseason last year. So I had to take some liberties at that point. Look, I think it's an up-in-the-air division. And so, you know, as I kind of wrestled with who could be in and who could be out, I do think the Dallas Cowboys are a team that's littered with talent. I do think they'll be well-coached. You know, the transition certainly doesn't work in their favor when you think about changing the coaching staff. But I think it's an up-in-the-air division and could come down at the end of the season, much like last year.
Yeah, Tim, that's why I love you. You're so transparent. This whole exercise is so hard.
I mean,
and
you
can't
be honest,
win.
For credibility.
You can't win, and it kills. I know, I hear you on that. But Dan, this I had to check. I can't believe you did this. You said that the Bills aren't going to make the postseason. They were one of the teams you picked. Did you forget they added Stephon Diggs to help Josh Allen's offense, which is really coming together? They have one of the best defenses. What were you thinking?
What kind of world do we live in, Diana, where it's a controversial opinion to say the Bills won't make the playoffs? The Bills didn't make the playoffs for about 17 years. Until a couple years ago when Sean McDermott got there. I like the direction they're headed. We've been hard in this segment on some consistent winners like the Eagles and the Texans. The Bills haven't shown the ability to be a consistent winner yet. I still think they're in a bit of a slower build than a lot of people are ready to admit. And I, you know, until the Patriots don't do it, I have to wait and see before I believe it.
Yeah, to quote Patrick Mahomes, I want to run this back in a few weeks when we see where all these teams land. But that being said, guys, other teams just missing the cut. To be cut from the postseason, we got the Patriots, the Packers, the Seahawks each had 7 votes. And Friday, we have a glass half full portion of the 5-in, 5-out series.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go back to yesterday's big news, Derrick Henry's contract extension. The Titans were able to come to terms with the running back. It's a 4-year, $50 million extension right before that 4 o'clock deadline. The deal includes $22.5 million guaranteed This after Henry led the NFL in rushing last year. It also means Tennessee has its 1-2 punch of Ryan Tannehill and Henry locked up for the next 4 years. They are all in on this offense. Arthur Smith is smiling. You know that. Now, earlier this offseason, the Titans, they signed Tannehill to that deal worth $91 million guaranteed for Tannehill. Well, we heard from Derrick Henry earlier in the show. Let's talk to the man who made this deal all go down for the Tennessee Titans. General Manager John Robinson joins NFL Live now. John, we were all watching very closely yesterday as we started to hear that the deal was actually going to come together. And it seemed it almost happened at the final minute, the last minute. Can you give us a little bit of the backstory, what happened in those final hours?
Yeah, I would say last 2 minutes. We got it in right at the buzzer. There was obviously some back and forth with, you know, between myself and Jimmy Sexton, his representative, his agent. You know, it's been going on for a while now. It really started to pick up steam, I would say, on the 14th or around lunchtime, and then yesterday morning, and then it culminated there in the last, I would say, hour and 15 minutes or so, where that, you know, it's, can we do this? Can we do that? And trying to massage it so that, you know, we felt good about it as a team, but Derek felt good about the commitment as well. And there were a couple of tense moments back and forth, making sure we've got, you know, things scanned and things signed and sent back to the league office. I double checked with the league office twice that we were good, that the deal was done, but just happy for him and happy for our organization that we're able to get that thing finalized.
You guys have the fifth most salary cap space in the league here. So are you still exploring adding maybe a potential edge rusher, like a veteran out on the market, like Jadeveon Clowney?
We're constantly exploring, you know, the players that are on the market, players that can, you know, come in here and help our football team, while also trying to, especially in today's world with you know, with the pandemic and, you know, the uncertainty that looms for the 2021 season and the 2022 season, excuse me, with salary cap. So trying to exercise some internal discipline that way, yet also trying to do everything we can to make sure we put a team out there that has a chance to make a run at this thing.
Have you guys had an opportunity to talk to Clowney's people in the last week or so to maybe see if this could be something you would explore and maybe make happen?
We may or may not have had conversations. I'll leave it at that.
You're good at this. Well, you guys certainly were busy this offseason, and I'm not sure if you saw this, but the Chiefs, they've been pretty busy too. They signed Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones. We all saw it. How do you see your team stacking up with the Super Bowl champs if you were to just take a look at this now?
They're a really, really explosive team. They've got playmakers at all the positions. Certainly Patrick Mahomes, an MVP, won a Super Bowl, huge contract. You know, they had Edwards-Helaire. I really liked him in the draft. You know, they've got players on defense. They got playmakers on offense. They got a really good offensive line and an outstanding football coach in Andy Reid. So there's a lot to, you know, to deal with there with that football team, along with a lot of other teams in the league.
All right, so you see them again. Who's coming out on top, John?
Well, you got to have confidence. You know, you hope that at the end of the day we can go in there and or they can, and you just trade punches and you hope you come up with more points than they do at the end of the day. But I'm not big into predictions, so.
Yeah, you're not good at predictions, but here's what you are good at. You're good at seeing potential, and you saw tremendous potential in Ryan Tannehill when many in the league really didn't see it anymore in him. So you brought him to Tennessee. You signed him to this four-year deal. What makes you specifically, believe in Ryan so much?
Well, I think it's the way he handled the entire situation. You know, he came in, you know, as a backup to Marcus last year, and he understood the role, and he kept working. He kept trying to improve. And then when given the opportunity, you could see him really take the reins. And he was a leader when he was the backup, but he was an even more vocal leader, I would say, once he was given the starting nod, and then went out and executed.
Final question here. What are your current plans for dealing with COVID as training camp approaches here just a few days away?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions with, you know, with certainly with our ownership group, Miss Amy Adams-Strunk, about, you know, the protocols and how we're working through that. Coach Vrabel and I have had discussions. We're internally just trying to make sure that we have our building and all of the mechanisms in place that whenever the league tells us the players can come back to training camp, that we meet all those protocols, that we're providing a safe environment for our players to come in and do their jobs and get their work in so that we can hopefully get out and get to the season and win some football games.
Yeah, hopefully, certainly a very, very weird time for everybody, and hopefully we'll get things back to normal in just a few weeks. John Robinson, thanks so much for joining NFL Live.
Thanks for having me.
These guys, a little humble, maybe not. All week long here at ESPN, we're unveiling player ratings for Madden NFL 21, which comes out at the end of August. So today, let's go through the 10 defensive backs. Here's the list led by Patriots corner Stephon Gilmore there with a rating of 99. Quite the list. Jamal Adams there at 5 with 92. You know, he really doesn't like that. So, Tim, what jumps out to you here?
Well, listen, I like Gilmore, you know, all the way up there at one. Herm Edwards used to say you need 30 interceptions to make it to the Hall of Fame. He's got 24, had six of them last year. No issues with him at one.
Dan, you're shaking your head because I think you're in on it with me. And I agree with you there. Stephon Gilmore should be number one. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us here on NFL Live. We'll see you all tomorrow.